Welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming. I'm going to get right started with introductions. This is Bart Mendel, president of Stillmar Construction Management, and Jacqueline Wolf. She's does homeowner coordination. And we're going to start with a brief summary from Gail on where the project is now, and then both Bart and Jacqueline will be speaking to you. Okay.
Hi, everybody.
Good morning, Gail.
Good morning.
Good morning, Gail.
As you all know, we have been working with the university for nearly 25 years regarding the leaks in our units, and more intensively in the last 4 or 5 years to come to some agreement on how to handle the leaks so that the units will be available for generations to come and so that we can live in reasonable comfort in the units as we envision them when we purchase them. And toward that end, we all know that this has not been a matter of litigation. It's been a matter of a joint recognition of a common interest, and that has been the tone of our discussions over these last few years. As you know, we completed work on 9/17/18, which gave us a model of sort of what can be done, what might be done, what could be changed. And since then, we've been working pretty intensively to come up with something that addresses really four interests. The interest of the future homeowners, which both the university and the current homeowners have been trying to represent as best we can. The interest of the current owners, not only in getting rid of the leaks, but in practical things like disruptions. The interest realities of university financing at this time, and the need to get rid of the leaks. So those four variables have guided us, and we now have a proposal on the table for a $7.135 million project that that will consist of three parts, and then the fourth part will be a part independent of that, but linked to it, of homeowner investment in new windows and doors. And we will be talking about that this morning. The project includes three big elements. The first is sort of a new roof system that includes roofs, gutters, drains, decking, that kind of thing. The second piece of it, and that will be funded out of the project. And it will be sort of, in one sense, it's one size fits all, and in another sense, it will be individualized. That is to say, we're going to reroute water, we're going to use a certain covering, that kind of thing, but it will take into account whether you're a two-unit or a three-unit, whether your unit slants this way, that kind of thing. But that's something that everybody's going to get. The second piece is everybody's going to get an envelope on their building that will address water entry through what we now have on there as Elastomeric. The third piece of it is going to be an individual unit by unit response to leaks. And that's what we're here to talk about today. That is also part of the project. It is funded by the project, within the project, and it will be different for every unit depending, there'll be many commonalities, but essentially custom made for each unit. That will be integrated with your decision, hopefully in favor of putting in new windows and doors in your unit. Now, technically, all those things that we call windows and doors are doors. They just are doors that act as windows right now. So you might hear a discussion of replacing all your doors, but we're talking about doors and windows, the wood ones that are downstairs. The project does not contemplate replacing the metal windows. So, that said, our discussion today is not about parts one and two. We will have a town hall meeting in which Bart will go over the whole project at a future time. But because we don't want to delay the project, the university has provided $80,000 now for us to move forward, and will provide additional funds to fund the project through March while we await approvals by two groups, one faculty committees and two the regents or the president's office. It's not clear yet which way it will go, whether it will go through the regents or the president's office. But in any case, until those approvals are in place, we really do not have a project. So the university is taking a risk that it will, out of its own pocket, pay these costs right now if the project fails. But in a way, it's a vote of confidence for us, saying that they expect that the project will go forward. Let's see if there's anything else. I think that just about does it. But in order to move the project forward, we have to do this work on the individual units and the inspections right now, and that's why Bart's here today.
I know you want to keep discussion to 3 and 4, but can you just explain briefly what this envelope means?
Gail,
he'll take care of it.
My presentation's on everything.
Oh, I thought you were going to just do...
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
So...
Oh, okay. All the better. Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. I thought you were just going to
do... Okay. Thank you, Gail, very much. Good morning, everyone. Thank you all for coming. I'm Bart Mandel from Stonemark Construction Management. This is my associate, Jacqueline Wolf, who all of you will hopefully get to know much better going forward. She spent a lot of time on this presentation, and I also want to thank your board, who has done so much work on a volunteer basis, not only working with my firm, but obviously with all of you and with the university. So I'm going to just talk very briefly about who we are, just so you know, a little background on the company. Stonemark Construction Management, I founded in 1997. We specialize in a construction management firm. We have licensed architects and engineers on staff. We don't do engineering. We don't do general contracting per se, but we manage all of that for clients for the last 14 years. And in particular, we have a specialty in repairing problem buildings, and I think you fall into that category. We have managed repairs in occupied homes, about 6,000 homes in that time period, and including in that almost 1,000, about 900 mold remediation, which is related to water intrusion. Never having a construction defect in any of those projects. So we're very, very successful at what we do because we're very thorough, we work with very qualified firms, and we make sure to analyze and look at the problems very carefully to make sure that the fix matches the problem, and that's why we've been successful. Now, just a couple of housekeeping points. In terms of this presentation, I'm very happy to take questions as we go with a very strong condition, and that is that the question is specifically relevant to the slide at hand. Most of your questions, I hope, will be answered in sequence through the presentation. So unless you have a burning question about that specific slide, if you could hold it, you probably will get your question answered. And just by way of example, I'm going to go through and show you what was done at 9/17, just to set the stage with some photos. You may wonder, well, are you going to do that and going forward? I'm going to address that later. So even that kind of question you don't need to ask until later. So, but if you do have a question, please, I'd like to have that discussion. And also, there's a lot of information I'm presenting. I'd like to ask Gail or the other board members to jump in if I do misstate something so that we have the right information on the table. So the way we work with you or with any other homeowner association group is we're your owner's representative and advocate. So we sit on the same side of the table as you do, managing the work of all of the project team. And that includes the architects, engineers, consultants on the design side, and the various contractors on the construction side. Our role is very extensive on this project. We've been talking about doing what we call a multiple prime system, where we actually manage the individual trade contractors. So we'll have a stucco contractor and a roofing contractor rather than one general contractor. There's the benefit of that, I'll just say briefly, is that the quality control is being managed by people on your side rather than filtered through a contractor's agenda. We get to pick the contractors that we want for the individual trades. So it provides a higher level of quality control, and it's also less expensive because we don't have to pay the markup on the general contract. So we're the concept right now is that we're going to manage the project from where you are now all the way to the very end and 10 years into the future by doing annual inspections to make sure everything is still as planned. So, needless to say, having done so many homes, we understand what it means to work in occupied homes. We know that you live there, and the intention is that you will continue to live there for the duration of the project, and we're going to do everything we can to minimize the impact and create the project model that is least disruptive. Having said that, it's going to be disruptive, and we'll talk more about that later. Also, what I'm going to present today is a summary form of pretty much everything that we've talked about with the board since the beginning of time, which was 8 months ago, I think, 6 months ago. So this is completely transparent. I don't believe there's anything that we're not sharing with you. So you know, in summary form, what we've been discussing. And I believe there will be more information available as time goes on, and you can request and you can talk to the board about further information. So as you know, as Gail said, that this project is proposed but not approved. And since we're waiting for approval, everything that I'm going to say is presented on the assumption that it's going to be approved. So that's a big caveat for the entire presentation. But everything that we're doing, we are moving forward with all of our work in the design phase on the assumption that it's going forward. So we are proceeding. It's not just a project that could, you know, we're actually proceeding on the presumption that it's going to go forward. Enough said. So at the risk of repeating Gail a little bit, I want to define, before we start, what's a window and what's a door, because we use these interchangeably. So the existing condition on the first floor, what you have now, except for 917, you have some doors that are operable, and then you have what we call fixed doors. These, they're in our terminology and in architectural terms, they are a door because they go all the way down to the floor. They're just not operable. So we don't call these windows, we call these fixed doors. Windows do not extend all the way down to the floor. Windows can also either be fixed or operable. So obviously, and this is 917, these are new operable doors. This is the existing, what we call a fixed door. So in your mind, if that's a window, we call it a fixed door. And this is the distinction, is that it actually goes down to the, this is the concrete slab. And I'll talk more about the flashing system later. So at 917, a lot of those fixed doors were removed and operable windows were installed. And we'll talk more about that later. So that's windows and doors. So, oh, actually, we'll talk more about it right now. 917. Okay, so the blue are new operable doors that were installed. And by the way, Gail is willing to do a tour of 917 at 1:30 today if people are interested. Is anybody interested in that? Raise your hand. No?
I haven't seen it yet.
One?
Well, you don't have to do it just for me.
Well, I just thought if
after
the presentation, if you're trying to decide whether you want wood doors or clad doors, you might want to take a second look to see what it looks like.
Those are clad doors.
And those are clad, so if any, but let's ask
again. Well, ask again at the end. Sorry, maybe premature. So at 917, the blue lines indicate new operable doors. There were doors there before, and there are doors there now. The red indicate previously they were fixed doors, now they're new operable windows, which are here and on this side of the courtyard. And these are still fixed doors, the two side lights by the front door. And this is a metal door. And again, we're going to dig deep into doors and windows in a little while. I'm going to go briefly through the history, which you've lived through, so you understand better than I. But obviously, since original construction, you've had lots of problems with water intrusion from all sorts of areas. And I'm going to explain some of that and show you some of the photos and the investigation that's been done. In particular, I want to talk about destructive testing that was performed by Mark Vanderslice in 2006. These are his photos. I'm just going to go through them quickly. This is when they did destructive testing on the roof. There's water underneath the roofing membrane. This is a transitional area at the roof where you have a step down and we have stucco and a little low parapet wall all coming together. And as this is opened up, there's no transitional flashing here. It's a big mess. Wasn't designed well, particularly wasn't installed well. I'll jump ahead slightly and say, of course, these are the kind of things that are going to be fixed in the current project. I'll explain more about those later. It's kind of hard to see. This is looking from the roof down. This is the area between the two decks where a party wall, and this is that stucco expansion joint between the two and the scupper. This is an area that had a lot of leaking because the scupper wasn't properly flashed and tied into the building paper, and it was all... This is typically where you find leaks, is where things come together, not in the middle of the field. Although you have that too. This is the sheet metal coping at the top of the wall. You can see this is being pried out. It's very, very short. It's quite this big. And there's not enough overlap between this sheet metal and the stucco, and that's where wind-driven rain is going to get in. This is, again, Mark's destructive testing. This shows what's happening because of that condition. See all this water staining. So just giving you a little background of where all these leaks are coming from. This is the big round vent in the attic. You can't waterproof it. So it leaked. This is the Juliet door with a lot of damage underneath it, which is not surprising. This is the door around the second floor deck with the trellis before it was removed. And you can see the badly deteriorated window flashing and rot. Am I going? Is this okay? You're with me? These are metal windows. I'm going to talk more about this later. The metal windows, where they come together at the seams, is a source of leaking that Mark identified. We have a specific repair plan for that. Now, this is something that's really, this was very telling to me. This is a photo from the inside with the drywall removed. I'm not sure which room, but you can see this is the building paper, and it's torn in the middle of the wall. So whenever this was originally installed by the stucco contractor, they broke the paper. And in fact, I can tell you why they did that. Usually when you put paper on studs, if there's not plywood, there's a kind of metal wire reinforcing that goes behind the paper to keep the stucco from blowing out the paper. And they didn't do that. So as a result, you've got, this is just one area that happened to be opened up. You can see it was like 10 holes in the middle of the wall, which is very unusual. So this leaking, not only were things joined, but right in the middle of the stucco wall. And we have repair site planned for that as well.
Excuse me, was this visible before the wall was removed?
No.
So the owners had no idea that there were leaks?
Well, there may have been. I don't know. There could have been water damage on the carpet. Or if this is the second floor, there could have been water damage around the ceiling or all the way on the first floor. So this is during testing, it's opened up and you don't know where the leak is coming from. In fact, what normally happens is you have a leak on the ground floor at the carpet and you think, oh, it's coming around the door. Well, it could be coming around the door, it could be coming around a vent next to the door, it could be coming from the second floor, it could be coming from the roof. So typically there are like 3, 4, 5 different water sources that are all contributing. That's why we have to be very careful and make sure we identify every single source of water intrusion, and that way you have a successful project. So exactly where this leak manifested, I don't know. But I would be, if this is just a random wall that's opened, it seems pretty likely that you have this problem all over the place. And some of the leaks you think may be from windows, maybe from this, or vice versa. It's hard to tell.
And was there any evidence for mold in any of these structures?
For some reason, there was very limited mold damage. There wasn't at 917. The university has said there's been very little incidence of mold. I have seen mold conditions in garages. I haven't seen it in units. And that's something that we're going to address if found. It has to be done properly. So, as you know, the 917, 918 was completely redone, or almost completely redone. And I'm sure this is familiar to you. The stucco was resurfaced with an acrylic coating after sandblasting. All the windows and doors were replaced, 100%. This is the roof. This is a single-ply membrane. It's a PVC that's chemical welded together at the seams. It's a very good 10, probably 20-year roofing system. Actually, this system is guaranteed not to leak for 20 years, even with standing water, I believe. It's very good system. It was detailed very well around all the parapets. I don't know if I'll keep moving around so that I don't block everyone at the same time. Also, the deck was redone, and including all the flashing around the perimeter and resloping. That this isn't exactly the area that we saw up on the roof, but this is, it's a different area that where transitional flashing was designed and installed between the wall and the parapet and the roof, and so that was all done and designed and installed. And of course, new operable windows installed where there were fixed doors. Actually, this is an operable door now, right? This is your living room?
The
middle one is an operable door, and the two are fixed doors now.
Correct. Oh, in all of us.
In everyone else's unit. And then we have these lovely sheet metal drainage devices that were very cleverly designed to be very inconspicuous. All the trellis, the the trellis on the deck was removed. The downstairs trellis over the carport was replaced with aluminum. I believe the trellis in the back were also removed, right? The back patio was removed. Here's where they stopped. This is the courtyard. They went down to the existing tile in the courtyard and basically stopped. We're going to talk a lot about that.
Could you, I'm sorry, could you do that?
Yeah.
It looks like they have a metal, new metal strip
at the base of it. Yeah, this metal strip goes behind the stucco. It's stainless steel flashing, and it's like an L shape, and it bends out, and it's on top of the tile. But it's not sealed underneath it.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Yes?
You said this is where they stopped. I'm just trying to understand
That's a good question. So basically, the drainage problems at grade were not addressed.
I see.
Everything from grade up was done, and where the building transitions to the patio was not addressed, and they didn't do anything about the site drainage or the landscaping.
So what I could, what I'm inferring from that is, there may be some other issues, and we may talk about that later.
Yes.
Other issues might
We're stopping somewhere else.
Got it.
At a better place, I think. Okay, so obviously there's been a new concept. Instead of the university proceeding with a public works type project with prevailing wage and going through their process, that funding it directly to the homeowner association managing it directly. What it means to me that the homeowner association manages directly is they've empowered us to manage it directly. So we're kind of taking over all of those in terms of the technical aspect. So, when we started, there was a concept that the university would fund to the homeowners association something called horizontal surfaces repair. Mm-hmm. Plus some other, something else, additional funding, right? So I want to talk about what was defined as horizontal surfaces. That was, because it included vertical. So horizontal meant new roofs complete. And when I say roofs, we're talking about all the flashing, all that, everything up there, skylights, the whole thing. The new water management system from the roofs to get the water away from the buildings, the deck, and including the transitional flashings, and the new Juliet door and the door to the second floor deck were included in what they called horizontal surfaces. That was just their definition. They did a cost estimate for that, which we compared. So we were retained in late April of 2011. And the purpose of our initial study was basically a feasibility study to determine whether this was a viable way to do a project. The board was meeting with the university and had discussions. Can we do this project ourselves? How would this work? So part of our work was to evaluate the so-called horizontal repair plan and to determine if this was advantageous to the association or not, and then what would be the recommended scope of work and how much would it cost. So I'm going to go through some information in our feasibility study that we generated at that time. So of course we did a number of things. We reviewed the project history. We discussed the prototype repairs at 9/17 and 18 with all the professionals and with everyone who was involved. We did our own physical inspections of the complex. We were given a pile of documentation on everything that was available, including Vanderslice's reports. So I talked to Vanderslice, talked to Hal Fremmer. We had meetings, etc. Then we actually did a cost analysis of the university's funding position on what horizontal repairs would cost, and we compared it. We did our own cost estimate and compared them, and of course prepared recommendations for the scope of work and cost estimates and budgets for the whole project. So I'm just going to flip through briefly some of the photos from that report showing what I showed you, what 917 looks like in the repaired condition. This is what the existing condition is, which I'm sure you're very familiar with because you live there. But so this is a typical roof system. You can see, obviously, this is original. It needs to be replaced. Basically, it's at the end of its life expectancy. So that's not all that surprising. This is a photo from Vanderslice's report on the plywood at the second floor deck. You can see how water stained that is. This is that transitional area that we showed that Vanderslice took apart, where you have all these different things coming together, and you can see how it's been temporarily repaired and patched with some kind of pooky in the past. That's a technical term. Again, we look very carefully at these transitions between the vertical stucco wall and the roof. So there's clearly a lot of problems there. You can see from the patchwork parapet, all the coping is badly rusted. The Juliet door, you know, it doesn't take a genius to know that that's leaking. This is a typical water stain that we see underneath the Juliet door from the first floor, which you're probably familiar with. This is some bubbling in the stucco. There are some of these, the units vary significantly. There's some of these have a lot of them, are very large. Some of them are very small. It's basically where the elastomeric paint is not adhering to the stucco substrate below. This is one of the second floor deck membranes where the top coat's completely worn through. This is the stucco cap at the parapet of the second floor deck. Typical rot at the trellises, some of them much worse than others. This board where the trellis joins the building is called a ledger. And we'll talk more about that later in terms of how that's going to be addressed. One of the big problems is that in the courtyard, the height of the floor, the interior and exterior tile are typically within like a half an inch of each other. That's a huge problem, and that's something that we want to look at very carefully. Coupled with that, the roof points water right at that condition. If you wanted to create a leak, this is what you desire. So obviously this has led to a lot of rot at those wood doors. This is one of my favorites. And also water damage on the inside, both on the wood floor and the carpet. This is nothing you don't know. Also, water migration from that tile soaks into this tile, and then there's efflorescence coming through that tile, which creates staining on the inside. Also, we have lots of different conditions. This patio's tile, this one's not. I believe every patio, including the courtyard, was originally built just like that, with the slabs of concrete with redwood spacers in between. That's what the original plans show, and a lot of people have cracking right along those seams in the tile.
And can we just add that when that tile gets raised on top of that cement, it then goes up and blocks the drainage under that wall, so then you have those leak intrusion problems when you have that lovely additional tile, including in our courtyard, which one originally intended to add.
Yeah, that was another very large mistake, was the addition of the tile to these patios. You can see this, the bottom of the wall here, the stucco terminates in what's called a weep screed. It's a piece of sheet metal flashing. And the idea with stucco is that it's a hard sponge. So when it rains, a lot of the water sheets off. So it's a water shedding device, but it's not waterproof. Water will soak into the stucco, and it hits the building paper behind it, which was what I showed you had all the holes in it. And it's supposed to run down the building paper and then hits this splashing at the bottom and it weeps out at the bottom. That's why it's called a weep screed. If that weep screed is blocked, then the stucco cannot drain at the bottom, so any moisture that, that gets behind the stucco, which and it's intended to do that, can't get out, and then you have water damage on the inside. So you can see here, there's the weep screed, which is actually too close to landscaping. It's supposed to be 4 inches from landscaping, 2 inches from hardscape. And here, it's less than zero, so the tile is now covering that weep screed. One of the biggest problems with the on the ground, at grade level, that we're going to address in the current project. Typical ceiling leaks. So we prepared a number of budgets, one of which was, as I said, the horizontal surfaces budget, just to compare, does the university have the right number? And then we prepared an estimate to do the whole thing, to completely redo the buildings. And we did what we called a limited scope repair project, which was our best evaluation of what you could do that is cost effective, that is not as expensive as the full scope, but that would be a successful project. So the recommendations for a limited scope include, we're going to go away from this horizontal vertical in a minute, but just in, what, by way of history, that we did include the vertical surfaces because we have to, interestingly, while most of the quantity of water that's getting into your homes is coming through the horizontal surfaces, the roofs and decks, most of the quantity of leak locations is vertical. As you can see from that one picture that had this picture, that has, there's so many different sources. So it was our recommendation that you cannot have a successful project just doing horizontal surfaces. I think that might have helped in terms of your discussions. But I think it was also, I think it's rather obvious if you look at the data. We just talked about that. Okay. So the project scope of work that we're now, that is included in the current project definition, we originally presented it in our report in June. It has been revised a number of times based on different parameters that I don't really need to go into. Basically, further discussions with design professionals, a lot of it had to do with funding, what the university would pay for example, the wood doors and windows are homeowner responsibility rather than association, so that was carved out. So what we're going to present today is the current scope of work. I'm not going to go through all the iterations of what was changed. I don't think it's really all that relevant. But what I present today is also to be further refined because we don't have we're just putting together our project team, and so there will be more refinement of this scope as we go forward to include not only the past, but the ideas of our brain trust going forward. So in general, the scope of work that we're planning is replacing the roofing system entirely, very similar to what was done to 917. That includes all the flashings, all the coping around the perimeter, all the vents. The difference would be reusing the roof tiles themselves. The tiles typically have a very long life expectancy, 7,500 years, and other than breakage, because some of them will break and take it apart, there's no real reason to not reuse them, and that's a cost savings that then we can apply to other more important things. So you'll see this is a prioritization effort of not using money where we don't need it. We're also going forward, we're going to look at a different manufacturer than the Sarnafil. It's still, we're going to use a very similar product, a single ply, chemical welded material that has a 20-year warranty that's warranted by the manufacturer, but that is slightly less, it's more forgiving than Sarnafil on their detailing. So I'm probably giving you too much detail, but the reason we're doing that is we can do a better we can do equally as good of a project at spending a little bit less money without changing the warranty. So again, we're just trying to create some improvements so we can do the work that we really need to do. The solar panels that exist will be removed and reinstalled on new frames that with the penetration seal. The drain assemblies and the scuppers is part of the project. The roof drainage, what they did in 917 is they made a project-wide decision to abandon all the interior piping for the roof drains. We don't agree with that. We think that it's, for one thing, it creates that horrific external detail. Every building, the one building we're in right now has interior roof drain. Every commercial building at this university does in the world. And there's nothing wrong in principle with interior drains as long as they are working and they're properly designed. So the part of the project will be, if we're going to maintain an existing interior roof drain, it's going to be water tested to make sure it doesn't leak. Some of them may be abandoned in the wrong place. Some of them may be moved. We may do some other types of systems, but in general, that's a big change that we're going to do going forward, is we're not going to abandon the interior piping. But we are going to reroute it or make sure it doesn't get in at the grade level. And I'll talk more about that later. Remove and replace the existing skylights. Now the stucco, there's been a lot of discussion on the stucco. Clearly that's one of the big problems because there's all the penetrations in the paper behind the stucco. So the stucco will be cut out anywhere it needs to be for a transitional flashing. That's at the roofs, that's at the decks, that's around the vents, a lot of the penetrations where different assemblies join. The vents that were problematic will either be removed or replaced. The scope includes treating the existing stucco by power washing and removing all of the loose paint, all of the organic material and dirt, so that it's a clean surface, and then to apply stucco cementitious waterproofing product. It's actually the same product that was installed in 917. It's made by Stowe, it's the manufacturer, STO. The product name is Flexel. Stowe is one of the oldest stucco manufacturing companies in the world. And we actually had that tested, and I'll explain that on site. So that will be installed over the existing substrate without sandblasting. That's the big difference.
So then it's colorless.
Right? It's actually gray. It's not, and then on top of that, there's a finish coat on. Yeah. Yes.
So you said stucco normally is porous to some degree, mm-hmm. and the effect of this will no longer be porous.
Yeah, that's right. The Flexel is a waterproofing product, and Stowe warrants for 10 years that you won't get water intrusion through their product. It's not vapor impermeable. I mean, to say that the other way, it's vapor permeable. So water vapor can pass through, which is what you want, so moisture isn't trapped. But so basically we're moving the waterproofing membrane from the building paper outboard to the outside of the stucco. It's the only thing we can do, short of tearing all the stucco out and replacing all the paper, which is way, we couldn't do that in occupied homes. It's way more expensive. And it just wasn't feasible.
So the whole issue with the weak screed would then be irrelevant?
No. Well, that's interesting. We're going to fix weak screed anyway. I mean, theoretically, if the stucco system is installed perfectly, all the flashing is also irrelevant. But we're not going to trust that. We're going to replace the flashing, you know, because I think that we'd be asking this product to do too much. And what we really want this product to do is to seal the outside of the stucco so that the leaks in the building paper are not a problem. We're not asking it to seal all of around all the, you know, the damaged flashing. So we're going to do both. Yes.
You said it had a 10-year warranty. What happens after 10 years?
Well, first of all, the warranty is held by the manufacturer, not the contractor, which is very good. That's what we try to do. And then, after 10 years, they don't warrant us.
So, I mean, from our point of view, does that mean we have to add to our
financial plans?
Yeah. To take off the paint, take off this cover, and reapply it in 10 years?
No, it has a 10-year warranty. It has a much longer life expectancy. So the life expectancy is more like 20 or 25 years. Does it need to be maintained? Yes. It needs to be cleaned every once in a while, and they may recommend recoating the top coat at 10 years, for example. We'll make sure to give that information to the board, included in the reserve study. So it doesn't mean that after 10 years the building's going to fall apart, it's going to leak again. It's just, the 10 years is a very long-term warranty. Most products are warranted for 1 year. So that the manufacturer will warrant it for 10 years is a very strong statement that it's...
Where's the reserve study issue that concerned most?
Yes.
We're obviously burdening the future with some expenses, and it'd be nice to know about all of them.
Yeah, that's part of our scope, is to identify a maintenance plan.
Perfect.
And in fact, I mentioned briefly that both UCSB and the association wanted us to inspect annually, and we're including that as part of the project definition, so that we're going to come back and see if there's any, you know, make sure that the recommendations for maintenance are being followed, and then we'll make sure the reserve study is at least given the right information.
We already have in our reserve study, though, this will not be a complete addition or anything, because we already have reserves for, I don't know what it's called, but repainting or re-elastomerping or whatever it is. So even as we sit here right now, we've collected about $180,000 towards that kind of work in our reserves.
And towards power washing.
Yeah, and power washing.
Every year, every 2 years.
Yeah,
so actually what will happen at the end of this project is I'll recommend that your reserve study be redone, the study itself, because a lot of your reserve study items will be reset to zero. So your percent funded at the end of this project should go up, not down. Because if you have money as a line item for a roof, for example, that'll go back to zero.
We don't, actually. So this is a really important point. We hope this goes through, because if it doesn't, the cost is $500,000 per year for 4 years to the association. We'll have to do a special assessment of about $7,000 to $8,000 per year to each owner for 4 years to get our roofs redone.
It's not redone this style, redone just slopping on a new roof?
No. No, it's redone with the 917-918 plan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't be not the whole project,
not
just the roof.
Project, just
the roof. A very important part of the stucco waterproofing project is that all the penetrations are sealed, so that'll be part of the project as well. So we looked at that. We've spent a lot of time on this, analyzing different products and how that material would work, different manufacturers. Because we wanted to be really certain that this, we're relying on this material as the vertical waterproofing to replace the building paper. And so there's been a lot of discussion about if this material can be applied over the existing substrate successfully. Because if we can do that, if we can eliminate the need for sandblasting, it saves a lot of money, and the sandblasting is very time consuming and extremely intrusive. It's noisy and dusty. Water blasting can probably be done in a day on a unit. Sandblasting, I'm told, for 917 took a week or two, right? I don't know.
Yes, but we took down a lot of stucco surface way, way, way down. So it wasn't just a prep for resurfacing.
Yeah.
And the
final coat of the stucco is about a quarter inch of rock. It was sandblasted off. Some of you may remember in 97 when we repainted the units, they were sandblasted then too.
but it wasn't the same kind of sandblasting. It was just to remove the paint, because we had defective paint, if you remember, the lawsuit that was involved. Paint had to be removed, we got the new paint. Old paint had to be taken off, it was defective. And so that sandblasting didn't seem to bother anybody, because it's much less intrusive. When you have to sandblast a quarter inch of rock, think about it, it was awful. Okay, but it's very different than sandblasting of just a layer of paint.
Yeah, so the water blasting that's being proposed is one step less than a light sandblasting that Harry's talking about. So, but according to the manufacturer, that's all they require. And we spent a lot of time actually proving that. So this is the existing condition of stucco with the bubbling paint. That would all be blasted off with a heavy water blast. And you may see these beautiful signs around the project.
I have one on my room that's facing the playground.
This was a test that was performed by the manufacturer. They sent their own technical people on site, and they put this is actually the Flexel product. That's what it'll look like when it's installed. It's a dark gray. We tested three different types of their material. They had another product called BTS, and this is just their version of elastomeric paint. And we tested all three of these in three different locations in different exposures. They prepped the wall, and then they adhere these testing rings to it, and then they wait for it to cure, and they come back and they pull it off and see how long it takes, what pressure it takes to pop. And every single one of their tests, actually for all three of their products, passed their requirements so that they would warrant any of these three products. We like the Flexel because it's waterproof. This one is not waterproof. This is elastomeric paint that is more waterproof. We wanted to test different products for different reasons.
Could you explain the difference between waterproof and vapor permeable, or how those two?
Yeah, you want something that's waterproof. We don't want it to be vapor permeable, because water vapor actually migrates back and forth inside, in and out of your building all the time. And if it's blocked, it can't penetrate the building envelope. It can condense in the exterior wall and create mold conditions. So we want to avoid that. But we do want it to be waterproof so that water from rain can't get in. So that's the distinction. Yes?
So has the water vapor permeability been tested as well? I mean, do you have evidence about that?
On their product or on the existing building?
No, on the stove flexible.
The stove flexel, there's test reports, and it has very high, it has reasonably high vapor permeability. Yeah. We can't test the existing building.
No.
Yeah. So I understand that they wanted to see something between 25 pound PSI strength of adherence. I believe with Flexel, everyone was over 100. So it was well above their testing criteria. So when they would pull on these test rings, the Flexel, where it would typically break behind the stucco, somewhere in the stucco, this stuff is stronger, the bond is stronger than the substrate.
So it's sticking to the elastomeric.
Yeah, it will stick to the elastomeric. The elastomeric is fully adhered to the stucco, and where it breaks is at the somewhere back behind that of the stucco. Yeah.
Maybe too minor a question, but how does this address, or how will you address the issue of those bubbles? Where, because you're keeping the elastomeric on, but the elastomeric has popped off the substrate.
They have to be removed.
So all the bubbles have to be...
The water blasting will remove those bubbles. And if it won't, then you have to scrape it by hand.
Okay.
And then the follow-up, then, the surface will be restored in a way that makes it compatible with
the main... Yeah, and then so on top of this, so this is this is applied, it's a Traldon material. And then you get a color coat, which is another 1/8 inch thick, 16, I don't know how big it is, color coat stucco product with very similar to 917. Actually, I think that's the finish that's being. But that's up for discussion. It's an aesthetic issue. It can be more of a textured finish. That's more of a smooth coat. So that's to be determined. But it obviously won't look gray. It'll look like a finished stucco building. Yes.
If the current elastomeric is liable to bubbling, it seems to me, and I can't think of a way around this, but we have bubbles today, which you're going to remove. But if it's poorly adhered throughout the whole system, then it seems likely that at some point in the future, bubbles in between the elastomeric and the substrate will occur again. Do you have a response to that?
Yes. Harry told me that most of the bubbles occurred in the first year. I don't know whether that's 100% true, but that's according to Harry's record.
It's my experience. That's why it's good to have everybody here. They might have
others. But let me say that was really the purpose. Stowe doesn't need to test their own product. They know how their own product's fine. What they're testing is the substrate. So what they're telling us is the paint is fully adhered sufficiently that it's not going to be a problem. And if for some reason there's a little tiny, there's a 1-inch round area of that doesn't adhere. This has a fiber mesh on the inside of it, so it's very strong. So it will in itself will resist cracking, or if there's a minor separation, it won't fall off the building. I mean, yeah. So that's your question. Yeah.
So this issue is covered in the warranty?
Yes. They warrant that it will adhere to the existing substrate and be waterproof for 10 years.
Is the existing substrate
including whatever it is?
Or the elastomeric?
Both, because in some cases the elastomeric is being knocked off where the bubbles are. But so they're warranting that it will adhere to the existing elastomeric, and the elastomeric will adhere to the stucco.
So this will not cure this future bubble. I'm a little confused.
Will it?
Well, I think that future bubble.
He's asking what happens if it bubbles in the future and there's a separation there. Stowe is saying that's not a problem. And basically, it's because you can't see it, but there's a fiberglass mesh that's embedded in this material that gives it some strength so that it won't crack.
Thank you.
Could you talk a little bit, I know this question may come up, about vapor permeability on top of elastomeric, because there's a vapor permeability of elastomeric and a vapor permeability of the stove, and what happens when you put those two together?
Okay, so right now, the vapor permeability of the stove product is acceptable. It is not vapor impermeable. So the question is, if the existing paint is vapor impermeable. We don't know the answer to that, but we can see from the inspections, I haven't found any evidence that shows a problem with vapor impermeability of the existing paint. I've seen a lot of buildings that have elastomeric paint with very high impermeability, or actually very low permeability. And what happens is you have condensation and mold on the inside. You have paint falling off the sheets, like the whole wall will fall off because it's got water trap behind it or moisture. We don't see that. So I don't see any evidence that you have a current vapor impermeability problem. And what we're doing is not going to make anything any worse. So if there isn't a problem now, we're not going to create one. That was Vapor Permeability 101. Okay, so on the second floor, so we've talked, we're talking about the scope of work that we're proceeding with. We talked about the roof, we talked about the stucco. On the second floor, the deck will be replaced, resloped as necessary, including the flashings and the deck drains.
And the trellis will be removed.
And the trellis will be removed. that's missing. You're right. The trellis on the second floor deck will be eliminated. The door and frame on the deck will be replaced. The Juliet door will be replaced, typically with a window. I heard that some people may want it to be a door. I think we're going to make that as an option because it's the door now. We're encouraging it to be a window because it's a lot easier to waterproof. And then repairing the middle metal windows. So the repair to the metal windows, which are all the window, it's your kitchen window and all the windows on the second floor, except for the Juliet door, right? Those are all metal windows. The problem with those, did you have a question, Harold, before
I move on? Yeah, I was wondering, could you address the sloping of the second floor deck as needed? Right now, the 9/17/18 deck is fairly steeply sloped compared to what we have. Do you have preliminary results on how that might look?
I think we have waterproofing versus aesthetics problem. Building code requires it to be sloped a quarter inch per foot, which is observable. Mm-hmm. And I don't think 9/17 is sloped more than that. And we may be able, we have talked about this, we can put in more drains so it's less sloped from one side to the other, but I don't know that we can get away from not sloping it. I don't know any other way to do this without sloping it a quarter inch per foot. I have metal windows I'll talk more about in a minute. I think I have a slide. Remind me if we don't.
I'm sorry, can you, on slope as required, what you mean is that there's going to be a standard slope applied everywhere, and everybody's going to have a quarter inch per foot as needed, not that you're going to go around and assess people's decks, and some people are going to get some slope and some people are not.
Correct. Everyone gets the same. Pretty much everything we've talked about is universal for all the buildings. There are unit-specific repairs that Gail is talking about. We'll get more into that later. But just about almost everything we're talking about, I'll be very clear when it's unit-specific. The courtyard and patios, this is an area we're studying right now. We have a civil engineer that is working on this. And I don't have the answers of exactly what's going to happen here, but the preliminary idea in the courtyard was to remove an 18-inch wide section around the perimeter and put in some kind of drainage system and flash that properly and waterproof it so that the bottom of the wall behind that weave screed is sealed all the way down the foundation to prevent water migration coming through and coming into the tile and staining the carpet.
This is the 18 wide. That's of the patio.
Around the perimeter of the patio. Yes. Okay. So it'd be removing a tile and a half, two tiles.
Putting a surface that drains.
Yeah, and exactly what we're going to, whether we're going to put in a drainage, a grate for drainage, whether we don't know that. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. So.
You can't turn any of the slides on here.
There's going to be, this is the area that was kind of where we stopped at 9/17, where they stopped and where we're not stopping. But we're studying it right now. I don't have really good answers. I can just tell you what the things we're looking at. Of course, any kind of repair is going to include rerouting the drainage away from these problematic areas. That's obviously mission critical, but how that's exactly done, we don't know. And to the extent patio finish or any other finish is disturbed, it's going to be replaced.
And when you say 18 inches adjacent to the exterior walls, I'm sure that includes like the outside wall. Does it also include like the walls on the, like the donut hole of the courtyard on the inside, or?
The donut hole.
In other words, the courtyard that's inside each unit.
He's only talking about that, the courtyard.
Okay. Oh, okay. I got you. All right. So we're not talking about the outside wall. We're only talking about the courtyard. Okay.
I think the back patios, mm-hmm. There's other opportunities because they actually slope there's a better fall away from the building, so we're talking about possibly removing those and lowering them. Some of them are probably okay the way they are. And so that's, we're getting into the what's unit specific, and we're going to have our engineer tell us which method we should use. We have the original storm drain system. There's a storm drains that run throughout the project. Some of them are 8 feet deep. They're not very close to the buildings, but if necessary, we can take roof water and pipe it all the way to those storm drains. And that's one option we're looking at. We'd like to limit that just because of cost, but that's one thing that we can do. But so anyway, all of these things are going to be evaluated to see what's most cost effective and what fits for each unit.
What determines the 18-inch standard? It seems like a big space. Mm-hmm. And is that really?
It may not be 18, maybe 12. I don't know. I'm just a number right now. We have to move. We have to cut far enough away from the building to be able to get in there and work. So a foot or 18 inches. This part was conceived in order to seal the bottom of the wall. That removal of that. How that fits in with the civil drainage, we're not sure yet. But we wanted to get these courtyards sealed so you don't have water intrusion going sideways. That's the point here. What we do with the water is another story.
Are you still considering some possibility of replacing the deck floor of the courtyard floors and resealing?
Yes.
So that's another option that you might, on some units, depending on the slope.
We're looking at everything. We're looking at taking out the patios and replacing them. Lowering them. We're talking about looking at taking out the tile finish. You know, so all of these options, and obviously we have to put something back. have to walk outside and fall into a hole.
We could just have a sauna.
Air trapped, yeah.
Waiting pool. So, civil engineer is our key there, and we hired the best one in town, I think, Ron. Bob Flowers. And so just finishing with the scope of work, any damaged landscaping would also be replaced. In fact, we're assuming we're replacing all the landscaping around all the buildings within a, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 foot zone of disturbance. And that's going to be redesigned by a landscape architect with some kind of low water use system. And there's a whole, of course, aesthetic issue with that we haven't even started.
6 to 10 feet?
I'm sorry?
6 to 10 feet?
Yeah. Well, enough to get scaffolded. The buildings have to be scaffolded 100%. So the scaffolding is usually 4 to 5 feet wide, and then they're walking around the scaffolding. So. And, you know, if there's trees and bushes that we can protect, we will, but we're just assuming that that's all going to have to be redone. So now I'm going to talk about what's different about our repair plan from 9/17 and 9/18. I mentioned before that the internal roof piping we're going to reuse or reroute where we can instead of doing the external scuppers. This is a floor plan courtesy of Harry, thank you very much, which shows the locations of the interior drains and piping, which was very useful to us. So we're going to actually study this and see. This is incorporated in our plan. Basically what we're doing is we're starting with the civil engineering, find out where the water can go. When we figure that out, then we're going to take that all the way up to the roof. And if we can leave a roof drain where it is, because we've got good drainage to the bottom, we will. We'll test it to make sure it works. We have to reroute it, and we'll move it based on where it's going to exit. So it's starting from the ground and working up. So it'll be a complete evaluation in that way.
Okay. Unit by unit.
Yes, unit by unit. Well, the civil engineering is unit by unit.
That's what I mean.
And then I'm assuming that many of the repairs will be very common. For all of these units, we're going to do X. For all of these units, we're going to do Y. So there maybe end up 3 or 4 typical repairs, but they will be applied where needed to each unit.
So when you investigate the inner piping, do you take off the entire interior
no.
wall?
Yeah. How do you know whether an interior
for some reason we had a problem? We had one problem where we for a long time thought the water came from the bottom up. but it turned out that one of the long pipes was bent by the constructors, and over time a hair is formed. And
yeah.
At some point it popped.
Right.
But and then we had a waterfall inside, but for a long time it was just a
yeah. Yeah. So the way it's tested, you remember that so the pipe exits at the bottom. So it's just the same way it's tested when it was built or when it should have been tested. You put a bladder in the bottom and you pump it up so it can't drain. You fill it up with water and you come back an hour or two later and see if it's changed. If it leaks, we have to tear open the drywall anyway because we've got to fix. There's going to be water damage. So we're going to make it leak if it's an existing leak, because there's a lot of water pressure when you fill up a pipe. It'll leak at that point. So that's how we're going to test it. Yes?
I was on the board at the time of the destructive testing, and I thought Vendor Slice said that those interior drains were undersized. Because they were not large enough to handle
water? Yeah, by the way, Mark is on our team.
Okay.
So everything that I'm telling you, we're working with him on as well. So when I talked to him about it, he agreed with me there was no reason to wholesale abandon the existing piping. That was the university's decision. And I can understand it. I mean, they're going back and thinking, well, a design decision to take external roof water, bring it into the building, and move it out in a home may not be such a great idea. But that's what we have. And to redo them, we created other problems. You know, the noise and the aesthetics and the expense of doing this outboard copper gutter system. So it's my understanding that the pipe is not undersized for the volume of water. That's going to be engineered also. The fact that it's small, we prefer to see it bigger because it can get clogged with leaves. That's more the. It's not that the pipe is too small for the amount of water. It's that it's small enough that you have to maintain the top better to make sure it doesn't plug. If it was a 4-inch drain, even the leaves are going to get in there and you're never going to have a problem. So, but that's something we're going to look at.
So
yes.
Perhaps it's discovered by the civil engineer, but I mean, that relates to the adequacy of the testing. If it's clogged with leaves, obviously the water needs to stand there for a long time, perhaps days, to make sure that it doesn't turn the hairline crack. Do you understand?
Well, if it's...
Behind
the parapet wall, right?
Well, if there's leaves in the line, I mean, those would be cleaned out as part of the project too. They just would have to be cleaned after they're working. But
over time, debris collects
inside the pipe.
Incrementally, yes.
Well,
it's just a thought that.
I'm not exactly sure what you're saying, because when we water test whether leaves or not in it, it's going to leak. Irrespective of whether it has.
Are you talking about maintenance over time?
No, I'm talking about the adequacy of the testing to make sure that it does not leak.
Whether it's blocked with leaves or not, it'll leak exactly the same when it's pumped up with water.
I think. If,
I'm talking about the future.
Future. But let me interpret, because we have this problem on our roof. I think what Jane's saying is standing water will attack the pipe and induce leaks that you would not find in a 1-hour test.
That's my point. Yes.
I see.
The future, that the testing has to be adequate.
The piping is PVC, which you can have it with water for 75 years without it deteriorating. So it isn't the water. In a metal pipe, it will continue to corrode. A plastic pipe basically doesn't corrode.
Unless it's bent.
If it's bent and broke, well, I can't tell you that a year from now an existing roof drain won't crack if it's under pressure. That's a possibility, but it's been 25 years, and so if they have a defective condition or joint or they're under pressure, it probably already would have broken. Is my expectation, but you know, it's just like anything else. You could have a plumbing leak in a water pipe the day after the construction starts. So, I mean, there's still things that happen in a home And I suppose that argument is what one of the things that UCSB said, well, we'll just get rid of them all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just considering we had these eucalyptus trees that,
we're going to recommend accelerated maintenance on the roofs to make sure the drains are clear, making sure the drain covers are installed so that leaves don't get in there, and, you know, but it's kind of ordinary maintenance. I think as long as the ordinary maintenance is done, you should be fine.
One point that's important too is that on all but two of our roof drains, the top strainer head thing, whatever you want to call it, which, by the way, the main way that's engineered is to be much larger in diameter than the drain itself, because then it clogs less frequently. Well, it's omitted on 6 out of 8 of our drains. It's just, if you go around, there's a hole, like a putting green.
Well, I'm just talking about the future.
Yeah, but what Harry's saying is the strainer keeps the leaves from building up and still allows water to get through because it's so large.
So that will cover the system.
Right. Yes.
And if you have real strainers, I mean, through the years, one of the big contributing factors to our problems is we don't even have real strainers.
No, I understand.
And it's just a nightmare.
We do have now retrofitted strainer things. They still get clogged. They still require maintenance all the time, and I don't want to slow things down, but here's just a piece of anecdote that's relevant to thinking about the maintenance. In the parking lot behind our house, there's about a 20-inch square inlet to the storm drain. In the last storm, that thing was entirely blocked by less than a quarter inch of eucalyptus leaves. It created a lake that was 8 inches deep. So, the maintenance issue, this is, I'm talking to the board, really serious issue.
Well, but I think this is a very good point, but I want to point out these require maintenance too.
Absolutely.
So that doesn't change. The number of times you have to clean the roof is the same regardless of what. This is just an external pipe as opposed to an internal pipe.
And those, actually, we've been analyzing since then. Those are structural problems for those two drains, John, that we've tried to tackle them over the last year, and we've been tackling them. We've identified two more problems for those two drains, and we just have to keep working on the structural contributions. You know, the whole drainage system there is defective. It's not sufficient.
Okay. Very good questions. So, metal windows. So, this is a significant variation from 917 to 918. This was specifically something we picked up from Mark Vanderslice and his destructive testing. He said that all the water intrusion that he found from the metal windows was coming from two sources. One, these little weep holes are blocked. They're very, very small. And so he suggested drilling them out so they're bigger. So what happens is in this type of window system, a certain amount of water does get in into the frame, and it collects in the track at the bottom of the window where the windows slide. And there's a weep hole, and that water falls harmlessly outside. If that weep hole is blocked, it overfills the track and overflows either into the wall cavity or onto the windowsill. So that's an easy fix. You know, it's a dollar or whatever. It's very small. And then the other thing is these frame corners. It's not exactly this one, but I showed you some of the other ones. These where the aluminum extrusions meet each other, they're not sealed. And so you get water that builds up in the track and it hits that little crack and then it seeps into the wall cavity and causes a leak. So there's a special product that Mark has specified that seals those. It's specially made for that. It's a caulking type of material. And then the third thing that we're doing for the metal windows, of course, is the stove flexo product comes over and seals directly to that window frame. So we have our waterproofing product that goes all the way to the frame. We have improved the drainage of the track so it doesn't go into the wall cavity and it drains out. So theoretically, we shouldn't have any window leaks from metal windows either, even without replacing them. Theoretically. Now, so that this is an area that we have significantly value engineered in order to save money, because these would also be a homeowner expense, right? And it's our expectation that this should be 95% effective. You know, we can't guarantee this, but we think that it's, you know, it's a pretty bulletproof repair considering the problem.
If an individual homeowner wanted to replace the metal windows, would there be a way to do that?
We talked about that, and what I don't remember what we decided.
I think we had a provisional conclusion, which was that you could do it if you, in advance, notified, ordered, you know, set it all up, so that, and took on the expense of doing it. But you have to have it all there, ready to go. In other words, the project is not going to order your windows for you. Absolutely. And so
would the project install them?
We didn't get that far.
I think what we decide, and we have to debate this some more.
Sure.
And I know it's a very good question. The problem is the project is paying for the overhead, and if everybody wants one thing here and one thing there, it becomes really complicated, and the overhead gets very high, and that isn't fair to the people that are not doing individual repairs. So I think the concept is we'll try to give you a window of opportunity to go in and replace these on your own prior to the assembly line coming to you.
Okay.
That would be ideal from a coordination point of view. And we would obviously give you some specs of what you, and I think you have to get any window approved by the board anyway, right? But it would be an
architectural
change. If it's a ARB.
But are you talking about just popping in a new window, or are you talking about replacing the flashing all around it? Because when I replaced one of those metal windows, I had to replace 18 inches of flashing around it. And that's a very different project, and it's a more effective fix, but it's hugely expensive compared to just popping in windows.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. It's including replacing the flashing.
Right.
Oh, and so this will not replace the flashing?
Not on the metal windows, no.
The flashing's behind the stucco, and the stucco's not being cut out. On the wood windows and doors, yes, we're replacing the flashing, not on this. But I think where a homeowner would replace it in advance, we'd ask you to, because these metal windows have flanges on them, and you cannot get them out without taking out the stucco. And so, but we can give assistance in terms of giving you the specs so your contractor can do it right, and then the new stucco system will come up to it and it'll be invisible.
Okay.
I think that's the preferred, but it isn't totally decided yet.
I wonder if we could just get a show of hands now. How many people think they might like to install new windows on the upstairs?
Oh,
so
wow.
Please. So one per household. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Like half
is about half. Yeah.
It's about $1,000 per window. When I replaced mine, it was $2,000 because all the stuff will work around. But if you do a whole lot, maybe it would be less. I don't know. So just think about that as your vision.
And then an equivalent question for you. The optimal time to do this would be after the power washing, but before any of the
snow. Before we show up. Before the assembly line comes to you.
So how will you do the power washing if you have
The stucco, the window would be, so the way to replace the window is you cut out 12 inches of stucco around the window, you take out the window, you put in a new frame, you put the flashing on, you redo the stucco up to the window. You don't have to redo the color coat. We could, because that could be replaced. And then it's basically, it's waterproof. And, you know, we need to talk about this more.
I think the board needs to discuss this. What's going to happen is the universe, the project was originally funded with a general contractor. By doing it with something called multi-prime contractors, we save a chunk of money. And that money is going to be used in a discretionary way to handle these, what's going on in each individual courtyard. That's sort of a half-baked explanation. It's not entirely right, but it's close enough. And it is possible that we will have some funds available to address issues that are not on the table right now, such as the one we're, similar to the one we're talking about now, but various things. And we will have to decide as a board what our priorities are. Just to give you one example, we don't know that there will be any additional funding, but if there is, do we want to provide for the digging out the stucco and doing the around the windows thing that we're talking about now, and have that be part of the project so the homeowner is only paying for the additional window? Or do we want to consider, as an example, going in and taking care of some of the cosmetic damage that has been done inside some of the units with leaks and stuff like that. So we're going to have to weigh things and see what we're...
We haven't discussed this, but I wouldn't be averse to having an option for an additional option for the homeowners to replace all their metal windows at a certain price.
Yeah, I think
I mean, if there's that many people that want to do it, because you're going to get a deal. If you have to do it yourself, it's going to be twice as much money.
And you'll have better architectural uniformity, right?
Yeah.
I realize they won't match the old metal windows, but at least the new one doesn't work all the time.
But what we can do is replace this one and not. We have way too many options already.
Right.
Yeah.
This is a problem.
Right.
And then you have 63 homes and everyone, you know, so we have 12 options on 63 homes, you can do the math, you know.
Yeah.
And then the contractors get confused and the price goes way up. So that we don't want to do. But I think if that's a project-wide interest, one package to redo all of them, I think that's something we could create as an option, and then we'll get, we just pass those costs on the homeowner.
So you projectize this, this
yeah.
element, and then that would be a separate level mini project and have its own discrete funding from the homeowners who chose that option.
Well, the way I understand, and we haven't again formalized this, but the way I understand the funding will be, we're gonna do inspections of all the homes, and we're gonna try to work with you to understand which option you're going to want to use for the windows and doors, metal, I mean, wood clad or wood, et cetera. And ideally, the project, you know what, I want to come back to this, if you don't mind. Because we have a whole section on windows and doors, and I'm really getting ahead of it.
Let me make one final comment on this, because I think I can clarify. Eric, I think the way it would work is just the way it's going to work downstairs, that it would become part of the project to do the removal around the windows. So that would be included in the project.
I don't know that we can do that.
Really?
It's a cost, and it's not, then homeowners are getting something that someone else is getting. I'm sorry. We need to talk about this more, but I don't see a problem with projectizing the metal window replacement. If there's significant, even 10 people's enough, but not. I think that you can still have to pay the stucco costs by the homeowner, by the homeowner, not by the project.
Just so that it can come to scale.
But we'll talk about that later. We should move on more quickly here. I'll try to go through the rest of the presentation.
Yeah,
if people want to leave, then you can leave, and if people want to stay and ask questions, I'll stay as long as you want.
But it's really the windows and doors that people.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's the part that you wanted. Okay, the landscaping will be replaced around the homes. Parapet walls won't have this industrial strength coping. The raised, very high raised thresholds won't be necessary because the drainage will be improved. Again, we talked about this. The second floor deck and the Juliet door are part of the project. They are going to be vinyl clad, paid for by the association.
The Juliet window that you just showed right there may not be the same design.
Yeah, this is what was done there. We'll have a new design, and maybe, and probably, I think we're going to have more, two options. So we've talked about this, but I just want to make it very clear that the intent of the project is to do a very fine job on the whole project in terms of waterproofing. But I wanted to explain more, be very clear on what is being done. The roof and horizontal surfaces is 100% fixed. There is no compromise on that. It's just, it's going to be done completely replaced. The vertical surfaces are, which is basically the stucco treatment and the metal window repair, is, you know, I don't know how to say it in terms of a percentage, but it's a very, very high percentage repair. We don't anticipate a lot of residual leaks. I think we're going to recommend if there is some kind of residual leak from some condition from a metal window that we didn't know about, then there should be money associated for that particular repair to come back and fix that in five homes or whatever. But we're anticipating that this is a very an excellent project-wide repair that addresses all these issues. But there is not a 100% guarantee on certain parts of it just by the nature of the project.
Could I have to add, the reason for that is that the university only wanted to do the horizontal surfaces. Anything vertical has been ripped from them inch by inch through tremendous pressure over the last year, relentless pressure. And so we are doing what we can to include vertical surfaces, but it was certainly not their intention. So this is our best solution, and I just want to thank you for
hearing all of that. And I'd just like to add, from my perspective, from a construction professional, I think this is an excellent repair. I'm very comfortable with this. So is Mark Vandersloot, who is on our team. If he wasn't, he wouldn't do this. So, and we have an architect. We're going to have a full project team, architects, engineers. Everybody's going to sign off on this. It's just we cannot offer 100% warranty on the parts that aren't 100% restored. That's all. So, but I'm not worried about it. I would do this to my own house. And compare, we've done 6,000 homes. This is an excellent, excellent system that we're proposing.
Can you speak just a little bit about inspectors? In terms of who hires the inspectors, or is it a state controlled or county or what? Because obviously that is what was.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is on UCSB property. So UCSB, we have to get a permit from UCSB, and UCSB's inspectors are the building inspectors.
Okay.
So that's that level.
The same ones that inspected when it was
originally. Hopefully they're all dead by now. Okay. So, but this is a great question. We do not rely on the building inspector, whether it's by university or the city or county in Santa Barbara, we do our own. So we will have the architect do inspections, we'll have the waterproofing consultant do inspections, Stowe, the manufacturer, is going to do inspections. And most importantly, we will have a full-time supervisor who is working for you, not the contractors, to make sure that everything is done properly. So they will be inspected both by us, by our design professionals, even before the university sends out their inspector. So it's a very high level of quality. Again, this is why we, as a company, this is the only way we do projects. If we can't have that level of control, we won't do your project, because then we don't know if it's going to be successful. So that's a great question.
Well, I'm concerned we're not going to get to the inspections and the whatever.
Okay, so at this point, I'm going to ask, let's hold off questions. I'm going to finish this slides in about 5 to 10 minutes, and then we can go through. We're actually close to the end. This is the budget that Gail talked about. It's hard construction costs about $90,000 per home. When you multiply that by 63, you get $5.7 million. Soft cost, architecture, engineering, art fees, $850,000. Contingency of 10%, that gets us to $7.135 million. This does not include the homeowner-funded doors. So actually, the project is more expensive than that because it includes what you're contributing. Gail already talked about this. If we have unexpended contingency, we don't know what is going to happen with that at this point. There's a lot of options. At this point, the interior repairs from water damage are one of the options. It's not decided whether that is going to be taken care of or not, your existing water staining. If the project creates a problem, let's for example, if we test an interior pipe and it leaks, then the drywall has to be torn out and repaired, the project will pay for that. Mm-hmm. But those water stains in the ceiling, right now we don't know. And hopefully we'll have that problem. We'll have unexpended contingency and we'll have to deal with it. So I'm looking forward to that. Typically, just so you know, in terms of our budgets, we're pretty conservative in our budgeting. Our goal is if we do everything by the end of the project, we want to be 5% underneath where we budgeted. You know, and typically we come in between 0 and 10% within that contingency, and that's our practice. So we have been approved to proceed with what we're calling limited pre-construction services, getting all the things together to proceed with the project. Remember, I said that the project hasn't been formally approved, but we are proceeding as if it's approved, and they're funding it as if it's approved, which is good. So what we're doing in this phase is further defining the scope of work, assembling the project team, performing individual unit inspections, which we'll talk about in a minute, and to move the project quickly into construction drawings and beyond. I think we're anticipating approval around March 2012. So your project team at this point, we're obviously the lead. Mark Vanderslice is a waterproofing consultant. We just concluded an RFP for architecture to four architects. We got the proposals yesterday for the architectural portion. That will include a landscape architect or designer to design the new landscaping around the perimeter. And we have a civil engineer who's dealing with all the site drainage issues, flowers. You know, I think we talked about the courtyards already. We've talked about these different things. I'm going to skip this. Okay. Finally, the thing that Gail said we were going to talk about today is windows and doors. So obviously these have been a significant problem. Many of them are leaking and they're homeowner responsibility, and so they're being funded by the homeowners. So for a complete project, the removal of all, and when we talk about doors and windows now, we're talking about these specific wood doors and windows on the first floor, not the kitchen window. Oh, and we're talking about the steel door to the utility room. So that's the range of what we're talking about right now. So it's necessary to replace those, and the replacement will include removing the stucco around them, taking out the door, or a fixed door or operable door, putting in a new door and frame system, either fixed or operable, with flashing on all four sides, replacing the stucco. That's what this part of the project is. It's an ideal time to do this because, for a huge number of reasons, it's an assembly line project. So here, at this point, I'm supposed to tell you how important this is for you guys to decide to pay for it on your own. And I can't stress enough, if you're going through in an assembly line and replacing these, it's incredibly efficient. It's inexpensive or less expensive to do it. You have a stucco contractor that's doing a whole bunch of other work, so it's very, very cost effective. We can integrate the flashing, the waterproofing systems, and the stucco repair, and it's all done and tied very nicely together. Of course, we have to coordinate with you in terms of your selections as part of the project. So we encourage you to really do this. And part of the costs, actually, for this system that I just described are actually being funded by the project. the flashing around the doors, that portion of it is attributed to the project. So the cost that we're proposing, this isn't fixed yet, but the cost that we're proposing is significantly less than the total cost of what it will cost to do this during the project. Let alone, and that is significantly less if you had to do it on your own, right? It's probably, we can probably do all of them at half price what it would cost an individual homeowner to replace these on their own. And the association is paying a part of that as part of the funding. In addition, UCSB is offering low interest loans, which are totally undefined at this point, right? We don't know anything about them except that somehow that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And when you leave and when you sell your home back to university, I understand there you will get a credit for the upgrades, because the new doors are going to be double pane and some of them will be vinyl clad, so I don't really understand that.
So basically, what they wanted to negotiate was that these would be added to the deal and depreciate, and we said no, for obvious reasons. But so what we agreed on was that the improvement in the door would go towards your resale value. So what is going to be determined is the difference. Say a door costs $10. We're going to figure out whether eight of those dollars or four of those dollars are improvement because it's double paned, because it's got some sun, whatever it is. And we're going to hopefully do that as favorably to the homeowner as possible with integrity. And so that portion, so the whole cost of it will not be added as a capital improvement, but a partial cost will be added.
Can you give us a ballpark?
Yeah, I'm going to in a minute. So we have different options. Vinyl clad, which is what's done in 917. So that's a wood door that has a vinyl cladding on the outside that's more weatherproof. If you choose that option, you obviously have to you can't choose that for one door, you have to choose it for all of them. On the second floor, the Juliet door and the door of the deck will be vinyl clad, so then they would all match. Wood doors can also be chosen. Could you have wood now? It didn't seem reasonable to mandate that you had to upgrade your door to something you don't have now. A wood door, properly maintained, will last a long time, but not as long as a vinyl clad wood door. I have in parentheses, individual units may be replaced. Of course, that's still, it's your option. We encourage you to do all of them for all the reasons we're talking about, but you can also choose individual, like you've already replaced these three and you just want to do the other. I think there's 11, 14, I can't remember now. Or 11.
Mm-hmm. I think there's 14.
14. Again, we're trying to create a small number of options to keep the confusion level to a dull roar. So whether it's wood or vinyl clad, we want to include an option for two operable windows in the living room. I'll show you what we're talking about. Of course, the final option is no replacement, meaning that the homeowner doesn't pay for any of them. Can I just get through the? I'm almost done. We'll get back to you. Of course, if this would be the operable window option in the living room, which would, do we have a slide of where? Yeah, it would be these two. No.
Yes.
Yeah.
The center one's in right. Four.
Either side of
the center door.
Fixed doors.
Those are fixed doors now. This is, yes. It's not the right caption, but it's these two doors. These two fixed doors could become operable windows. That's an option the board wanted to give you.
Can I have just the...
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
This is the slide. You have, so these two. Right, so and this is the living room. Some of your units are flipped, remember, so.
Yeah. We will still have an operable door, right?
Yes.
In the middle.
Right now, where they're operable, they're going to remain operable. It's this slide here. So you have an operable door in the living room, obviously the entry and the study, and to the study to the back patio, from the dining room and from the family room. All those are operable now. They're going to be operable later.
Doors.
Operable doors.
Going through the floor.
Yes. They open and close. And you don't have to jump over a real high threshold, right? And then these will be, these fixed doors will remain as fixed doors. And what we said is that these two then could be an option for windows. Here's the cost.
Yay! What everyone wants to know.
So, wood doors, and these are not final. This is our estimate at this time. We did a cost analysis. We think this is going to be pretty close. This is to give you an idea for financial planning purposes. You don't have to sign up. You don't have to say yes or no, because we don't have a fixed number yet. But this is close for your consideration. And it's something like 70% of the costs. I think 30% of the costs are borne by the association. So this is not the total cost of the, it's over $20,000 to replace all these. So wood doors, $13,200, clad doors, $16,735. To be determined later.
And all of the difference between the wood doors and the clad doors, 100% of that difference is an improvement. So all of that is recoverable at the end when you sell.
Is there any option for other upgrades like double pane windows, double pane glass?
I hope not. I think that we are including the double pane. These are double pane.
Yes, they're all double.
What I'm trying to avoid is a whole bunch of options that make it very confusing and expensive. The way these are priced, all of these are new double, all of them are double pane.
And I think, don't they all have sun resisting something?
They in the glass.
Well, we haven't gotten that far in terms of design, but we certainly can.
And you could replace them yourselves at another time, but it would be far higher than this, in the $20,000.
Well, I think our cost for the project in an assembly line fashion is over $20,000. It could be 50% beyond that. Because, again, to do it right and to take out the stucco and to seal it all in. Of course, so that's the risk that you take if you don't replace them. Any water intrusion is not the association's problem from that area. The costs that we just talked about are vastly higher, at least double, because you don't get any of the benefits of doing this as a project. You don't get a no-interest loan, and I understand that the university may charge you upon sale to replace that. So I guess...
No, the university can't charge you for an upgrade at the time.
No, it's not an upgrade.
They can't charge you. They do already charge people when they move out and there's damaged doors and windows. MacPherson, for example. That's always been true.
Okay. Well,
yeah. So in other words, you have to pay for it one somewhere or another, I guess.
But what's new, Harry, what's new about it is up until now, the university has been satisfied to charge you the cost of just popping something new in there without doing all the surround work. It is unclear if at the time of sale the doors and windows are leaking, they may charge you for the whole job to do it right.
I mean, charge you for the defects they created.
Well said, right?
That's basically what this is.
Well, if you're opting not to let them fix it now, you will have to pay for it later. They're offering to do it now, but if you say don't do it now, you're saying, okay, then I will fix it myself.
Well, wait a second. So, some people have very carefully maintained everything already, and other people haven't.
And if they maintained it enough and it's not leaking when you move out, fine.
But what I'm hearing is they may say, look, you've got to pay for an upgrade now.
I don't think we know that.
It should be known and defined that if someone's maintained everything well, they should not be charged for any reason under that. I mean, that's just obvious.
But you were just referring to it as a defect, not a lack of maintenance.
Well, because the flashing and stuff is a defect, okay? It's not, you know, and those of us who put a lot of time into it, because we've all had, those of us who've worked on our windows have put an awful lot of time into
figuring
out. That's
exactly the catch. They'll fix the flashing for you, but if you tell them not to, that's a little, that's the hook.
We're never going to solve it here. This is a complicated issue. But still, there's a principle that people who have done the right thing shouldn't get screwed.
No, except that people who have done the right thing cannot, or very few of us have gone in and changed the flashing. There are few who have changed the flashing, done everything that's going to be done now. The university's offering to do it now, and we all hope that everybody will do it, and let's just leave it at that hope and expectation that we're talking about something that's going to be such a rare exception that we don't have to debate it.
I'm mindful of people's time, and I again only have another 5 minutes. I think we can finish, and then some people may want to leave. So what we're doing now is architect selection. We're going through the civil engineering study, and we're going to do home inspections, looking through all of your individual homes. And I'd like to ask Jacqueline to talk about that right now.
Okay, everybody take a deep breath. Now that we talked money, you are all going to have an opportunity to talk. I'm gonna come to everyone's home, and we'll have an opportunity to talk about your home, your options, which windows in your home, and I think that's going to help a lot. So as part of the planning for the project, because there's so many variables, we're going to come to everyone's home and look at specific conditions in each home. I'm going to walk with you around the whole home, look at signs of water infiltration, if you have any mold condition, if you have any rot or specific conditions. We have the records, if you've been living there a while. I know that there were surveys done in the past, 2008, 2009. We have those records. We're incorporating all that information and building upon it with all our scope of work for our planning, so that's important, so you know that. And then we'll take this information as well. I brought calendars with me, and I brought cards, so we can schedule in the next few weeks. That we have 63 inspections to do, so it's going to take a while. I've done scores and scores of these inspections. I've been with Stonemark for 11 years. I know your project very well. I've been on it since the beginning. I've been on your roofs. I've been all through many of your homes, so I know what the issues are. If I don't have an answer, I'll get it for you. If you want to call, you call me, so you have a face and a person for contact, okay? And see what else. I brought flyers, so you can all take a flyer, and it goes through, you know, what else we're going to do, and so you have some information. I'm going to leave them, and I understand that this presentation is going to get uploaded on your website, and we'll whatever information Stonemark's going to produce, we're going to provide to the board, and they'll upload on your website too, so you're going to have, you know, access to information. And so my contact information's on here, so after we're done, come on over and sign up if you know your schedule, and we'll be happy to do that for you, okay? So that was quick, because I know you all want to go home.
Yes. Okay, so I've got a bunch of questions. I'm asking just for everybody.
Of course.
How long will a typical inspection take?
I think for most homes, an hour or less.
Okay. And is this the time when I tell you that my child has asthma and you need to be careful about dust, this or whatever?
Yes.
So
you can tell me all your particular concerns.
She's not a very
my person.
That's an additional charge more for that.
Yeah, I mean we all need individual. We all have individual situations, so that's another benefit of having the home inspections.
And to the we're going to try to accommodate individual situations as much as possible. One thing I forgot to tell you is that the trellises they're not being replaced as part of the project. The wood trellis on the deck is being removed, and the wood trellises on the ground floor are being repaired. So that's one of the things we're going to look at is the trellises.
Any other questions?
I think I have maybe two or three more slides. So sign up today if you can for an inspection. That'll help us. So what to expect? We're going to give you updates as our work progresses in the forms of newsletters and further, maybe have more meetings, I'm not sure. We will have to determine a final cost for the windows and doors, which you can formally, you know, and we'll talk about, you know, everyone obviously has to know how that's going to be, when you have to pay and when it's going to be funded, when you have to decide by, that'll all come later. We do want you to tell Jacqueline when she comes by what you probably will do. You don't have to commit. We'd like to get an idea, and that, just like today when people said they wanted to replace all their metal windows, that's very useful for our project planning. So we're looking to hopefully begin, assuming everything gets approved and we're on schedule for construction to start next summer. Yes.
When you say next, you mean 2012?
2012, this summer.
And how long?
How long is the project? I think we were thinking a year. But I'm not certain of that. We've done a lot more work on the budget than we have on the schedule.
Are you going to go cluster by cluster?
Yes.
Or
cluster by cluster.
So it's
basically would be an assembly line.
Okay.
So we're going to, and this would all be figured out and presented to you. We're going to try to do it from what makes most sense to the project. Obviously, if you do it geographically, it's much more efficient. So we're going to start with one cluster, and then the roofers would go through, and then the stuff, you know, the scaffolding would go up, and the doors and windows, and the roofers then move on to the next set of buildings, and people follow through. So the work in the individual home, I would guess that it might be 2 months of work in your cluster, for example, roughly. That doesn't mean someone's going to be banging on your roof every day, but it's an assembly line.
Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be the case for that for each home, it will last 1 year, right?
No. Each home, 2 months, 2.5 months, something like that. But, yeah.
Do you have any sense at this point of how much interior rearranging will be required to accommodate this work? I mean, the old scheme, for example, you had to decant out of the garage or something. So
who provides ongoing newsletters and information?
We don't.
Okay.
We haven't thought that through yet. Other than the fact that we expect that you're going to be living there, and we're going to have to work through all those details. So we don't even know whether, for example, the roof drainage, is it in the garage ceiling or not? We don't know that, so I can't. But we will, and we'll spend time communicating that with you. My final slide, we must all hang together, or we shall all hang separately. This is my homeowner association special slide. So, now, any other questions?
The question is, I probably goes to Gail, which is just to clarify, when you're talking about when homeowner funded, you know, the main part of the project, we're actually talking about costs that will be tacked on to the resale value? What, the $7 million?
That is correct. It's sort of correct.
Mm-hmm.
And it is. Todd Lee is going to make a presentation to a particular committee on the 11th of December, and we will know a lot more then. But one of the pieces under consideration is that most of it will be tacked on to future homeowners, but they are thinking of making West Campus Point, it might not happen this way, but they're thinking of making West Campus Point the least expensive housing in their faculty housing group, and taking some of the costs from this project and spreading them across 1,400 future homeowners so that the prices of these units will stay down and will be kept a little bit more moderately priced. But we don't know yet how Todd is going to work it out, and it's really their choice how they're going to do it, but everybody is totally mindful of keeping West Campus Point affordable for future homeowners. It is a major point in the negotiation and the discussion.
Even though a lot of us don't, you know, have repeatedly pointed out that that should not be our business.
Well, it's not our business how it's done, but it's our business that future homeowners are protected. But how they do it is what Todley is working out.
So given this work schedule starting this summer, what do you envision then with rain and everything else, inclement weather, the final, you know, end of the project?
About a year later? Roughly. I mean, I can't tell you right now if it's 15 months or 10 or... But that's what we expect about a year. So it's going to go through a winter no matter when we start, right?
I don't know if you can see Connie's hand over there.
What if you... I have a really nice custom paint job on the interior of my house. So will replacing all the doors and windows affect that? Will I have to...
Great question. I mean, generally speaking, if we have to take out a door and we have to replace the drywall around the door, then that will be replaced and painted. We try to, it's really the project definition. Whether, for example, if you have wallpaper around that, you know, does that mean we have to replace? And that wallpaper is not available. Does the whole house have to be? You know, these are the kind of questions we have to discuss further with the board. I mean, I think the intent is to repair the interior condition to before the construction started. Not the existing water damage, but anything the construction causes. Mm-hmm. But exactly how far that goes, if you have a faux paint job or wallpaper or tile that gets cracked or something that can't be matched, we have to kind of talk about that. But generally, just try to be reasonable to make sure you're not impacted negatively by the construction project. Is that vague enough for you?
You said that the trellises or some trellises are not going to be replaced. We go back to that. Early said something about the ledger board.
Yeah. Okay. So the wood. One of the value engineering points, a lot of the wood trellises are in good condition, believe it or not. With the exception of the ledger, which is the board around the perimeter, at this point our concept, we're going to look at these individually, but our concept is to take down the existing trellis, replace the wood ledger around the perimeter, and reflash it, because that's part of the building envelope. And then rebuild the trellis either with new or existing wood and repaint it.
So you're not going to be taking out those posts or columns?
No. Yeah. And if, for example, the beam is in good shape, it stays. In fact, if the ledger is all watertight, it'll all stay. But I think that's probably rare. The trellis on the second floor deck is coming out because it's really hard to waterproof.
But there's no plan for any kind of nothing new going on.
Correct.
The vertical trellis is next to the carport.
Not part of the project.
That's not part of the
project. You mean the lattice?
Yeah, the lattice one.
If a ledger is not rotted or leaking, it won't be replaced?
Yeah, sure it is.
That's correct.
I think.
But you think that most of them are rotted?
I do. I think they're a big problem, the way they're installed.
In the back trellises, in the middle?
Same.
Same, only if they're already perfect.
Well, no, they're going to be repaired.
Okay.
And with the same spec.
Okay.
So all the ground floor trellises are being repaired.
So it's going to look the same.
It's going to look the same, except it's not going to be rotted. It won't leak.
Well, we're going to miss it.
I know. The question was, what work will be done by the project if the homeowner does not replace the door? The answer is nothing.
Okay.
That flashing will not be replaced.
What if there's leaking around in the doors?
That's the problem. See, if the door is bad, it doesn't make much sense to tear the stucco out around it and reflash like a bad door.
If the door is good and there's leaking in the wall or the flashing around the door,
well, remember, the stucco system is going to come and attach all the way to the frame. So, theoretically, even if the flashing, if there's a leak at the flashing, then the stucco system should prevent that. But we can't redo the flashing on an unreplaced door. The main problem is the flashing at the bottom is one of the most important points. And you can't replace that without removing the door. And once you remove the door and frame, you have to throw it away and get a new one.
Okay, so that gets to the complicated point. I mean, say you need to replace the flashing underneath the door as part of the project, which is not the homeowner's responsibility, then that can't be done if the homeowner is not willing to pay for it, use their own money
That's
to fix
right.
the door. That is not
right. I debated this for a month to figure out I cannot come up with a scenario that makes any sense at all if the door is not replaced. We cannot get to that flashing.
And in most cases you will.
Well, we will. As long as the door is replaced,
most cases you will need to, no, but I'm saying in most cases that flashing will need to be fixed, because in most cases of the problems.
Well, remember, a lot of the problem is that the patio is too high, and that condition, either by doing a channel drain or something, will be improved. So we're not leaving the existing condition as bad as it was before, right? And if there's bad flashing, or if you don't replace your door, you know, the drainage at the bottom is better, and the stucco system covers the flashing on the other three sides. So it's improved in all cases. But to actually go in and replace the flashing around the door, we can't do it without the door being removed. So we tried to come up with a scenario to replace the bottom flashing, and there just isn't one. Because it goes in first from a construction point. You start at the bottom and you work your way up. So you're right. But I don't have any solution for that other than if the door is replaced.
That's why we decided it would be good to offer low interest loans, so that affordability shouldn't be an issue.
Well,
so
and also if we're putting as much as possible of the door replacement cost onto the project rather than but that mitigates your issue. It doesn't solve it.
During these inspections, is there going to be some sort of advice whether or not whether the doors are in good condition or whether we should or not replace them?
Will
we get some help from
of course,
from
we're going to, yes, but I can tell you right now our advice is pretty simple. You should replace your wood doors for the main reason they're 25 years old. Okay, what's the life expectancy on an exterior wood door? It's probably 25 years at most.
Except so these doors, which is probably about 10 years.
So, I mean, the big problem to me is if you've gone and replaced a bunch of them last year, and you didn't replace the flash, well, then we're going to have to figure some. You know, if they're original doors, I think our recommendation is very simple: replace them. But you guys, it's your option. It has to be, because you're paying for it.
Can I just get a clarification from the board on this, too, about the, there's going to be some amount of cost that would be considered an improvement and go to the base price of the house that would then increase with the CPI?
No,
like
it does not. I think they do. I think
even
other people know better than I, but I think on the capital improvements they don't.
Currently.
But it wouldn't depreciate.
No, it won't depreciate.
Okay, so it's kind of in the middle.
Yeah. They have depreciated in the past, but it's not allowed really in the CCP.
Okay, that's what I was just trying to get some clarification of what we're aiming for.
I'd like to just put out the information as well in deciding between wood and clad on this upgrade issue. The clad ones only come in standard colors. They will not match the existing estuary blue that we have. Only wood that can be painted that color. Vinyl comes in white, beige.
White, gray, and tan.
There you go. So if you go clad, it will not be blue.
On the outside.
Okay. So the inside is wood.
And if you want to see what the clad looks like.
Is the inside wood or is the inside clad?
No,
the inside is wood. On 9/17/18.
Yeah.
The insides are wood.
Yes.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Just a brief question. Can we paint them the same color?
And you can paint, yeah.
The inside, not the outside.
The outside, if you paint the vinyl, it's just going to fall off.
Choose wood and
wood. Wood, yes.
The project will paint.
But we can keep the same color.
Yeah. The price that we're talking about is including paint, by the way, on the exterior and interior and finishing the inside. Yes.
I just wanted to say how much I appreciated your presentation and your command of the material. It's very impressive. We've been exposed to these issues for a long time, and I just think you did a wonderful summary of the current state of the project, and I'm just very impressed with your professionalism and your evident confidence.
Wow.
So I'm very happy to share your project.
And I'd like to add that the board decisions and the hard work.
Yes.
Really, very, very
important. So, and I'd like thanks to the board.
I'd like to thank Carol for making brownies this morning.
Thank you all very much. We look forward to working with
you. And please sign up for your inspection before you go.
We can do that.
Does anyone want to go see
today's
9/17 next Gale's tour at 1:30? I don't think you have any takers.
Good.
That's
great.
I'm so glad you got